Welcome to the 130th edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, David Udo, and we're recording on the second Monday of September, in the midst of an international break. England will be kicking off in Switzerland whilst we're in the process of recording, whilst Arsenal's last outing was the away draw at Leicester City 8 days ago. We'll start as usual with the panel intros. First up, as he gets older, he seems to be becoming gradually more tolerant of matters Arsenal-related, although he prefers to watch Grade A matches in the pub rather than forking out £90 for a North Bank upper ticket these days. He was the man who called for Arsene Wenger's head in the autumn of 2001, just before the club went on a run of winning 5 trophies in 4 seasons, but also predicted Paul Gascoigne breaking his arm in the early 1990s. So, knee-jerk reaction idiot or wise old soothsayer? Take your pick, because he's gracing us with his presence this evening. Hello to the Highbury spy himself, Mr. Steve Ashford.
Hello. I fancy digging that up. I've even forgotten I'd written that.
Next up, he has recently produced a third Arsenal book co-written with Alex Flynn, although it is his writing partner that has been tarting himself around various Arsenal podcasts to plug it. But naturally, the Gooner Podcast is the place where the co-author of Arsene and Arsenal, The Quest to Rediscover Past Glories, can be found, because he's the editor of the fanzine that funds this podcast. One listener, a Mr. Andy Marston, even emailed in to ask, why has Kevin stopped appearing on these podcasts? They lack a certain gravitas without him. The answer to that is that he fills in when we are short of panellists, so it's a warm welcome this evening to our utility man, Mr. Kevin Witcher.
Hello, and hopefully here with the required gravitas for Mr. Marston. Thank you.
This
for
is the first podcast I've ever been on with Kev.
You are
really?
No, never done
a podcast before. You've always been hanging around, but never actually on the panel.
I would dispute that, but I'm not going to bother looking it up.
I'm going to have to behave myself tonight.
I want to see this in the comments section when this goes live on Thursday. Last, but by no means least, a regular Gooner contributor who's also been busy on the creative front in recent months, penning a book on Arsene Wenger's 50 defining fixtures, which we shall doubtless chat about later in proceedings as half the reason he is here to garner publicity for the book. Aside from that, as a jobbing journalist, he writes for the Evening Standard and other organs, whilst interviewing ex-players and other football faces for the Gooner. His boundless enthusiasm, as opposed to the usual demeanour of a hackneyed journo, always yields highly readable results. He's been on the podcast one before last season, and we are sure he will return again before too long. So welcome back, Mr. Laith Youssef.
Thanks for having me. Can't just say I'm honoured to be in the presence of such Gooner royalty as well. So thanks for that.
You don't have to brown nose. We'll have you back. It'll be fine.
Early. Checks
in the post.
So, gents, this is the first time we've met up since, the end of last season. There's plenty to talk about. So let's kick off with our reflections on the individual buys during the summer transfer window. Mr. Ashford, your thoughts on our new centre-forward, right player, who knows, Alexis Sanchez.
Well, my thoughts on him until very recently were that he's not a centre-forward. I scored against Besiktas, got that winner, and thank God he did. Paid a huge chunk of his transfer fee off by scoring that winner. But to be honest, I don't really see him as a striker. I'm glad we signed Welbeck. I think we'd have been very short up front, especially with Drew getting injured. I dare say that Sanchez could have, you know, tucked in and kind of doubled up as a striker and for a short period, but I don't think that's his best position. So glad we signed him, good player, but I think we've got to yet to see the best of him, and I really don't see him as a striker.
Okay, any ideas where else he's going to play?
On the right, I think. I see him as a really, from what I've seen so far, he looks a lot better on the right wing, attacking, getting the balls in, cutting in, shooting on his, you know, on his better feet. But no, I just don't see him as a striker at all. But certainly one of the front three, definitely.
Okay, moving back, obviously Bakary Sagna left us and went to Manchester City. And although we were linked with that Ivorian guy playing for Sochaux or Toulouse, we ended up going for Mathieu Debuchy. How do you feel about him, Mr. Youssef?
Yeah, I'm very pleased with that signing. If you look at Didier Deschamps, French manager, he chose Debuchy over Sagna for the World Cup. That says a lot, really. I'm very pleased. Obviously, it would have been great to keep Sagna, but I interviewed Perry Gross for the Gooner earlier in the summer, and he basically said, hopefully Sagna will be the last Arsenal player who leaves for better money, basically, somewhere else. So we've interviewed a few Geordie fans over the years, and I talked to a guy from the True Faith fanzine last season, and basically he was singing Debuchy's praises even then, and he's always been a very consistent performer, so I'm very pleased we've got him, to be fair.
Good. Should never have been sent off against Besiktas, should he?
No.
Terrible sending off.
Yeah.
Referee got that totally wrong.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, the referee didn't give them a couple of penalties, which, you know, another ref might have done. But by and large, in the second half, he was really against us.
Yeah.
Every tackle the book came out. We were hanging on for dear life at the end there, when Debussy got sent off.
Mm-hmm.
Very harsh sending off that was.
Yeah, my nails disappeared in the last 15 minutes of that game, I can guarantee. Kevin, the other one of our five signings we've seen play so far is Callum Chambers. What are your thoughts on him?
I think the crowd have obviously taken to him because of his commitments, and he reminds people a bit of a young Tony Adams in the way that he's barking orders. I see a little bit of going further back, a little bit of Bobby Moore in him because of the. Although he does make mistakes, yes, he's very young, and the crowd are going to forgive him for that. He does also seem to read the game quite well, so I think he's got a natural intelligence for the game, and there is a feeling that he is going to become an Arsenal great, and. He's just so young at the moment that we don't want to burn him out.
He looks like an older player, doesn't he, Kev? Looks like an older player.
He does look more mature.
When he came on against Besiktas on that right wing, as right back, when Debussy went off, we brought him on as right back. We'd never seen him play at right back before. And it was like an old experienced player was coming on to shore up the defence, not a young kid. And he was leaping into tackles, sliding into tackles, getting down the wing, getting crosses in, telling the other defenders what to do. He was absolutely brilliant, and he certainly looks a lot older than 19 when he plays.
Yeah, I think you're right. None of us are getting any younger, but I remember Tony Adams' debut against Sunderland in, was it 82, 83, 83, 84? We lost 2-1, but he came on as a 17, 18 year old. He was telling players where to go. David O'Leary where to go. He was telling everyone.
Yeah.
You're right, Callum Chambers, there's echoes of that. Yeah.
There is, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Are we not slightly going overboard about Mr. Chambers, though? This man who's played less than 30 games as a professional, he's ended up in the England squad already.
Do you know what? I think we've all had enough experience of watching football matches over the years to spot a good player, no matter how old he is. I think with Chambers, you just know you've got a real talent on your hands there. And it's definitely a case of, it doesn't matter how old you are, it's how good you are. And he is good.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I think he's also adding something to the team, which I don't think we've seen enough of lately. It's difficult to put your finger on exactly what. If I was to try and put it in a word, I'd say spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he does really look like he wants to win football matches, and he wants to win his one-on-ones as well. I mean, I think his timing, a lot of the time, is very, very good for one who's so young. At the same time, you know, he's made some pretty high-profile gaffes.
Mm-hmm. The worst one was at Leicester when he dived in, and they should have taken a 2-1 lead.
So he's still learning, and I think that's understood by everybody. That's why no one is having a go at him for his mistakes, because he has been thrown in at the deep end. But as I say, you know, we just got to be a little bit wary of overplaying him, because we've seen what's happened. I mean, someone like Wayne Rooney is an example of a player who's overplayed in the first 5 years of his career, and he's never been as good. And there's an argument that maybe Jack Wilshere may have gone down that road as well, simply because he did play a hell of a lot, partly through his own faults. He continued playing when he shouldn't have, and we wait to see if he'll ever fulfil his promise. So I hope he's used selectively. I don't think it would be a good idea for him to play every game this season.
I think against Leicester, when Wilshere was left out of the side and Ramsey played in midfield, we always thought when Ramsey didn't have a good game with Wilshere, everyone said, oh, Ramsey and Wilshere can't play together. So he didn't play with Wilshere against Leicester, and Ramsey still didn't have a good game. So maybe that's encouraging. Maybe they can play together. Maybe Ramsey's just going through a spell of temporary bad form.
Yeah, I agree with you. Going back to Callum Chambers, the only sort of note of caution I would say was I was at the Charity Shield, Community Shield, whatever you want to call it these days, and Dzeko sort of eased past him. Mm. And Dzeko's not really renowned for his pace. So whether he's got, you know, the pace at that level is a different matter. But then Bobby Moore didn't have pace. Tony Adams didn't really have pace. So Yeah.
Well, it took a very, very cruel lesson from Marco van Basten for Adams to learn that it's okay to stand off centre forwards if they're going to be that good, you know.
But
he is. Another signing, which you haven't seen anything of, is David Ospina, our new goalkeeper. Open table. Any thoughts on Mr. Ospina?
Played well in the World Cup. Played very well in the World Cup. In fact, he's the kind of keeper you're watching in the World Cup and you're thinking, wish he was an Arsenal player. But I really can't see how he's going to dislodge Chesney. I think Chesney's going to be there for the long term. So it's going to be difficult to get him in the first team.
I'm not sure. I mean, Wenger has dropped Chesney before. He's dropped Lehmann. So he's not worried about dropping keepers. I suspect that he will get opportunities. I suspect he will obviously play against...
Capital One Cup?
Yeah, FA
Cup.
That's a no-brainer. It's whether or not he's also given a bit of a run out in Europe. Perhaps if there's a game which Wenger feels might be a little easier, maybe against Anderlecht or someone, he might give Ospina his chance then. But, I mean, it is important to have good backup. And I think he's, for me, as one who was never convinced by Fabianski, and let's face it, he did win the FA Cup final, but look at what he did in the last
I actually thought that was a mistake, because I think if Chesney had been in goal in the FA Cup final, maybe one, if not two, of those first two whole goals would have gone in. I think he would have saved
at least Chesney will have a go at dominating his area now, even if he gets it wrong occasionally, but Fabianski never managed to do that really. So a better backup in that sense. And
how long is he going to be prepared to play second?
Well, I think one of the things about the Premier League now is the wages are of a level whereby there are some keepers who will simply accept being number two, especially if they are going to get some games in the cup. I mean, you know, it's
he was awesome at Nice, wasn't he? Whenever he didn't play, they never went. They never won.
I don't know enough about the guy, to be honest. I mean, obviously...
Whenever he missed a game through injury, they either drew or lost. As soon as he came back, they won again. Mm. Well, that's coincidence, but he was a real talisman for them.
And it's nice to have an international goalkeeper as a second choice.
Yeah. I interviewed Sol Campbell during the summer for The Standard, and he was raving about a Mexican keeper, Ochoa, name was. And he basically went into a five-minute stream of consciousness about why Wenger should buy this player. So, I mean, he had a good tournament, but he was a free transfer as well. It's always interesting to sort of realise the rationale behind why they signed someone, just like that Italian keeper last year, who never surfaced once, really. So I just don't know where they get the ideas from to sort of buy players. It's great that Chesney's obviously going to have someone challenging him, but it was pretty left field for me buying someone like that. But
Well, I don't think it was a sheer coincidence that he was playing for a French club.
Graham Carr normally sacks up these days, doesn't he?
Indeed. The last signing we made at the very, very last minute, as we all found out through Jim White on Transfer Deadline Day, was Danny Welbeck. Mr. Ashford, what do you think about Mr. Welbeck?
Well, I'm not just saying this. I'm not just saying this. I've always been a fan.
Okay.
Whenever I watch England play, and I do go to the occasional England game, whenever I watch them play...
On hospitality.
Yeah, I hasten to add. From the bar. But I've always been impressed with Welbeck. He seems to play better for England than he did for United. But still on the left. I've ever seen him play through the middle since his Sunderland days, when he was on loan there. But the talent that guy's got, the pace, the talent, the power, sometimes the ball seems glued to his foot. And with Thierry Henry being his hero... And with him saying that he always saw himself playing for Arsenal, he said the right things. Yeah. He seems like an intelligent, level-headed guy. Seems quite good friends with the other Arsenal England players. You know, I'd much rather have had him than Loic Remy. Although I think he's a good player as well. But no, I think good things about Welbeck. I think we're going to really go with good form with him up front.
I'm so glad you said that, because I don't want to get on the wrong side of you. Love Welbeck. I think he's great.
Yeah.
I was looking at some stats the other day, and Henry had 20-odd goals in 90 league games for Monaco.
Right.
You know, Welbeck's got pretty much the same record.
30 in 142 games, I think it is.
Yeah, so obviously, slightly less and with more games. But at the same time, the principle is Wenger can develop players to, you know, be centre-forwards. There's one of them there, in the background, the sounds of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, basically, I'm really excited. I interviewed Patrick Barkley, and the Gooner kindly retweeted the tweet.
He loves him, doesn't he?
Yeah, I talked to him in January, and I said, you know, if you were asked Wenger, who would you sign now in January 2014? He said Danny Welbeck, very skillful, great attitude. Yeah, a really good player. So yeah, I can't wait to see him.
The transfer deadline day last Tuesday, Patrick Barkley was on, and they were talking to him about all the United signings. They were talking about all of them. You know, the big striker they'd signed all that money for, Falcao. Oh, and then right at the very end, Patrick Barkley said to the journalist that was interviewing him and talks about, aren't you going to ask me about Danny Welbeck then? And his Scottish accent, which I can't do.
sitting next to me then.
Yeah. And the fella said, OK, what do you think of Welbeck? He said, the signing of the summer, Patrick Barkley.
Fair play.
Yeah, that's what he said. But he said that, he would do brilliant at Arsenal.
I went to a Q&A with Patrick Barkley in January, and he said, do you know who he said the most wanted player in this summer's transfer window is going to be, because he's the best player and people don't give him the credit that he's due? Seamus Coleman, who's still at Everton, such is my understanding. I do remember him saying that.
Now, quick question. Does Patrick Barkley, if not support Arsenal, favour Arsenal? Does he like Arsenal, do you think?
I shouldn't be saying this, but I met him at the Standard Christmas party last year. And, I'm not sure if the fact he's saying this, but he respects Arsenal greatly.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's written a book on Herbert Chapman. He's got a lot of time for...
That's right, I forgot that.
Yeah. He's got a lot of time for the history, the traditions, just the class of Arsenal Football Club. I wouldn't say he's a supporter, and I don't want to get in trouble by saying but he's certainly got a massive respect for Arsenal Football Club, along with every other club in the league.
More so than maybe Chelsea.
I couldn't possibly comment, but I mean, he's written a book on Jose Mourinho as well, so take it how you want to take it. But he has got massive respect for Arsenal Football Club.
Brilliant.
For a fact, so,
Going back to Danny Welbeck, Mr. Witcher, what do you think? Are you happy with him?
I'm happy with signing somebody, starters. I mean... did look for a while like Arsenal was going to progress with Yaya Sanogo, with his absolute love of developing young players, almost as if he wanted to prove a point. I felt fortunately I think that the Leicester game came just at the right time, and long or short of it is that the performance there probably tipped the balance, because Yaya didn't play at all well that day. And I mean, I think Welbeck, it's just a matter of getting a few goals, and once he's done that, you could get right in the groove. Pause. So basically I think Welbeck, I'm optimistic he can work out. I have always had doubts about him. You know, I've always thought of him as a misser of chances. But I think there was that stat that actually said, in terms of minutes on the pitch, he was actually quite efficient last season. Now, was that because he was coming on as a sub when other teams were tired and scoring late goals for Man United? I'm not sure. But, I mean, certainly...
Was he in the same situation at United as Jack Wilshere is at Arsenal? Was he taken for granted there? Was he not performing to the best of his ability for whatever reason?
He was never... I'm not sure... He was the first choice player for a while. But I think he just fell out of favour. I'm not sure. I mean, he seems to have been around forever. That's the funny thing about him. He's only 23, but to me...
Well, he went on loan at Sunderland, and he played up front at Sunderland. And he did do very well there as a striker. I remember being impressed with him there. But we all knew he was going back to United.
I think the key thing will be playing against the big teams. He'll get the chances Giroud has got before, and we'll see if he puts them away. He's certainly got more pace.
Could be scoring for England while we speak.
Well, he could be, but I suspect the other thing is it would be a bit more on the floor with him. I'm not sure we'd be. He's not.
Well, I like that because Giroud's got no pace on the floor.
Yeah,
You can't see Giroud on one on one, taking the ball round a player, beating him for pace and scoring. Giroud's goals are all headers or getting on the end of crosses. He's never. I don't think he's ever made a goal for himself like by beating a player for pace or speed. Welbeck will do that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, we needed someone. Yeah. Even if Giroud was still fit, we needed someone.
I think they'll be great together, Welbeck and Giroud, if Wenger ever plays 4-4-2.
I don't think that'll happen. I think it'll be, but one of them will come on as a sub.
Yeah. But even if we're chasing the game, to have those two together would be brilliant.
Yeah. What I'm looking forward to is Theo Walcott coming back, feeding out wide.
And me.
I can't wait. We were rocked by him losing him last season.
We've not been the same team.
If he's fit and firing with potentially Sanchez and Welbeck, then I think we've got a very good forward line, very good attacking six basically. So
There's another thing you pulled me up on as well, Dave, because I always said Walcott would never make it. so publicly in front of all the Arsenal fans, I hereby apologise. I got it wrong. Walcott is brilliant.
Good on you.
Are those five players we bought, are they enough? Or with a supposed £65 million minimum unused, should we have done more?
I mean, you guys touched on it earlier about Falcao at United. Do we really want to be paying £360,000 a week to someone who's had three serious knee injuries, who's... he's not particularly mobile. We've obviously got a lot of money now and it's great, but we don't want to go crazy. Leeds United got in the semi-finals of the Champions League. Look at them, three or four years later. We still have got that budget that, we're not going to go crazy about, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, I do.
And we're lauded for it around the world because of it as well. And it's, obviously, you could argue to the cows come home about the fact we should have spent more money in the past, certainly on particular transfer deadline days and things like that. But at the same time, I think we need to be lauded for what we're doing.
Yeah, because if we'd have paid Falcao £300,000 a week and we could have afforded it, Ozil would have wanted £200,000.
Well, that as well. Yeah, wage inflation.
All the other players would want parity. Ramsey would want that money.
Yes, but we didn't need necessarily to use that money for
Falcao.
No, we have to accept the reality here. How many defenders are in the squad?
Six.
How many positions are there to fill?
Four.
Right, do the maths. Do you know what I'm saying? Obviously, the plan is to use Flamini as an emergency fullback on either side, presumably. There's a bit of thinking there. However, if you've got two centre-backs injured, you're down to presumably...
Hayden Chambers.
Well, I don't count Hayden as a first-team squad player. Well, I'm not sure. Do you have to be registered to play... It's only Europe that you have to be registered as a 25-man squad. Is the Premier League any different?
I think it is, because you do have to name a 25-man squad in the Premier League.
But presumably you can have use on top of that.
I'm not sure.
Right. Well, anyway, if we're getting down to using Hayden in first-team matches in the Premier League, we're in shit street.
What about Jamie, that guy from Charlton that we paid £2 million for?
Who?
Semi-Ajay,
came from Charlton.
How old is he?
21, I think.
Really?
Maybe slightly younger. Maybe 20.
He's not 16.
No, highly thought of.
I'll wait and see if he's in the first team squad picture before I'm convinced he's going to be taking any part in anything but the Capital Cup game. There are areas of the squad which are too light on numbers, in which, with the money Arsenal have got, there is no reason they could not have been covered.
It worries me greatly that we're going to play Man City this weekend, and we still haven't got that powerful, rampaging, powerful defensive midfielder in the Vieira mould. I know Vieira's, don't grow on trees, but there are players out there that would have improved what we've got. Mm. Arteta's great, love Arteta, but I don't see him as a defensive midfielder. When he signed for us, he played behind the front two. He was an attacking midfielder. We turned him into that. Diaby, if he was fit, would play that role brilliantly, but he's never fit. And Flamini, good, but not brilliant. I mean, I don't see from last year, Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City, when we got thrashed, I don't see anything changing this year as far as the defence is concerned, because that player hasn't been bought, and he should have been. Mm.
Yeah, I hasten to add, I was talking purely about the attacking players. I think you're right. You're both right. We do need certain defensive reinforcements, definitely. It was interesting that Wenger let Ignacio Miguel go as well.
Yeah.
So he obviously didn't rate him long term either. So, I definitely think we need to strengthen defensively.
Although Miguel was on loan at Leicester for all the last season.
Yeah, once they go on loan, it's very rarely they come back and played for first, and obviously Wiltshire went to Bolton, but apart from that I can't think of too many. So
I mean, that Blaise Matuidi that played for France in the World Cup, great player, plays for PSG, out of favour up there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was rumours that a good bid would have got him. I'd have him tomorrow.
When they were parading the World Cup around Germany, and Sami Khedira was interviewed, Podolski leant into the mic and said, Arsenal, come to Arsenal. Maybe there was some truth behind that rumour, and we're in for him, but who knows?
Yeah. Jim, what player would you have preferred in that role, in that defensive midfield role? Yeah, is there anyone you can think of that we could...
Well, I would have gone for Pogba at the start of the summer, myself, before the World Cup. He's an obvious Wenger-type player.
Yeah. That was a real dereliction of duty from Alex Ferguson, letting him go to Juventus in the first place.
You wouldn't want Alex on back, I suppose.
No.
Well, I see what you're saying, but at the same time, is he better than Arteta?
Probably, yes.
And also he can play centre-back.
Yeah.
So much as, I mean, the reason Song isn't being invited back is because of the way he left. I mean, apparently there were huge attitude problems towards the end. And one suspects, I mean, we'll get on to Cesc, but there may be an element of that there as well. But if you want to cover two positions, you could do a lot worse than Song. Would Song's pride allow him to come back to a team where maybe he won't necessarily be guaranteed to start, which I'm sure he will at West Ham. Having said that, he would have got used to being on the bench at Barcelona. So my suspicion is if he was rewarded appropriately, he would take the money. But I think the bridges were burnt when he left, and there's no going back.
Do you see Jack as a defensive midfielder?
Well, I could see him being played there when... I mean, the thing is, the other question is, are Arsenal playing... Because someone is of the opinion, we are not playing the same formation as last season. And I put this on my new Twitter account as a question.
You've got a Twitter account, Kevin?
I'm afraid I had to. I had to. In fact, I tweeted you about half an hour ago to ask where the hell you were. As I couldn't DM you because we're not following each other at this point.
I'll make sure we change that.
But anyway, the long and short of it is this particular correspondent thought last season we were playing 4-2-3-1. And now they think we're playing 4-1-4-1. So we basically, he's of the opinion that we're pushing a midfield player forward a lot more. Now, I think it's a lot more fluid. I think what's happened is that when Ramsey hasn't played, Wilshere may have pushed on a bit more than Ramsey would have at certain times in the game. Whereas Ramsey is a bit more defensive-minded in terms of position, I think. So that may be... a possible explanation why we're not looking quite as defensively solid. I'm not sure we have changed formation. The two, to me, the two deeper players are always Ramsey alongside Arteta. And I think Wilshere alongside Arteta is basically a similar thing, except Jack is a bit excitable and goes forward a bit too much sometimes, and we have gaps there.
So I think Jack's a better player going forward. Jack's a better player in the attacking third.
So are you going to play him in the hole behind the striker?
I wouldn't play Jack in a defensive role in any shape or form.
Right.
His talent's going past players and releasing forwards. I think it's wasted when he does that too deep.
Yeah, and it's interesting what you touch on about the 4-1-4-1. I contributed to an article on that for Standard, basically. Yeah, it's 4-2-3-1 dead, basically.
Yeah.
Do we need two defensive midfielders at home sometimes?
Yeah, we don't.
I think Jack... ultimately, hopefully, Wenger sees him as more of an attacking forward. Yeah. Obviously, you could argue his ankle was sort of kept him back in terms of always pushing on. You look at youngsters, you look at anyone who plays football, your first touch is always to push the ball on. And that's what Jack does. But basically, I don't know if he never had great pace, but he's lost a yard of pace at the moment because of injuries. Hopefully, he'll regain that. But he always looks to push on. And, you know, as a defensive midfielder, I think we lose some of his talents doing that.
Yeah, so, I think so as well.
Okay. But it's difficult to fit them all in then. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to play Wilshere up, you know, in the hole, as it were, then you're going to have to drop someone.
See, I don't see Jack playing every match anyway. Because
well, I don't think he is a first team pick at the moment. If you're going to pick 11 players, you know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Ramsey and Arteta are the two more holding players. I mean, he's playing Ozil out on the left now. So, if, for the sake of the argument, Cazorla is now the man behind the striker. And Ozil's not going to be
typical
dropped.
Finger, though, round, you know, square pegs and round holes.
Well, this is it. But I mean, in a way, the 4-2-3-1 formation, or whatever you want to call it, almost demands that of players because you almost can't have wingers in that formation because you if you have wingers, you've only got two guys in the middle, and one of them's holding back anyway. One of them's Dennis Bergkamp. I mean, when was the last time Arsenal really played with wingers anyway? Yeah. So where does that leave someone like?
We sometimes do when we're chasing the game, and we just put all the forwards on the pitch, and yeah. I think we always look brilliant when we do
but,
that.
But you know, you've got this. What I'm trying to get at is you've got this kind of midfield player now, attacking midfield player who doesn't have a position.
Yeah.
You know, who? I mean, the way Arsenal play, they're just all over the shop anyway. The idea of Ozil being a wide player is ridiculous. He isn't a wide player. But in a way, the formation dictates that you're going to have that kind of player playing to the left of your...
I reckon Ozil's going to get severely pissed off if we carry on playing him out wide.
Right. Well, I mean, apart from anything else, he's been asked to do defensive work.
Yeah.
And
why don't we just say, sod the defensive work, just sit behind the striker, play in the hole.
Well, that is the question.
Put everyone through.
That is the question. So why is Cazorla playing there instead of Ozil?
Yeah.
Well, Cazorla's good at it.
Yeah, Cazorla is, but wouldn't... I mean, the point is, have we got a left-sided player who can actually help the left-back? Yes or no?
Podolski ain't going to do it, is he?
Yeah. I mean, the only one I could see doing it is if you switch Sanchez over there. You know, he will track back and help his defender. But Ozil's not going to do it. Cazorla's not going to do it. Podolski's not going to do it. I'm running out of names now to put people playing that. I mean, the Ox could, in theory, play over that flank and defend a bit. I'm not convinced about him on the left so much.
I like what you're saying about that, you know, tactical formations are fluid, basically. It's so true. I mean, you can say it's 4-2-3-1, you can say 4-1-4-1, anything you want, basically. I saw that Chile team play at Wembley last November, and they were switching. They did three different formations first half alone. They were far above England's level, basically. Yeah. And it's just about intelligent footballers.
You're dead right, actually, because... Why can't you switch formation during a match to confuse the other team?
Yeah, you don't need to look at the bench just to go, well, actually, you know, I'm going to sort of, you know, come inside a bit or, you know, whatever, so... Yeah.
Well, that is what Arsenal aspire to do, and in a way they're trying to imitate Barcelona with that as well, and Barcelona were based originally on the Dutch idea of total football anyway, because it was Johan Cruyff who really got the modern Barcelona clicking, as it were.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, you've got to have the players to do it, and the understanding to do it, and the brilliance to do it. And at times, Arsenal fall short. If you're going to do that, and you've got Yaya Sanogo as one of your link men, you're going to have problems. So, you know, you have to have the quality of personnel, which we did have in the days when we were winning trophies.
Well, I just worry that he's going to play Welbeck on the left. You know, and still Sanogo up the front somewhere.
Well, this is a big question. I mean, assuming that the defence, and as we've spoken about previously, the Arteta-Ramsey axis picks itself, who do we think that Wenger's four attacking selections are going to be when everyone's fit? Or is that literally a $64,000 question now?
Take your pick.
Well, I'll go first. I will say Ozil will play. I will say Alexis Sanchez will play. You'll have Theo playing, and you will have...
Welbeck.
I would put Welbeck. I think Welbeck will start ahead of Giroud because I think, as much as anything, at the type of football that combination will play, which is based on through balls and someone getting on the end of them. Because, I mean, when Giroud is playing, Ozil almost has one less option, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those would be the four.
Yeah, I agree, to be honest. I can't see beyond that. Sanchez, Welbeck, Ozil and Walcott. And when Walcott's injured, then probably the Ox.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to mention him, basically. I mean, depending on what system you play, if you're talking about a midfielder who plays central, I'm sure we all at that Palace game last year at home, he had an absolute stormer that day through the middle.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah, and if that's a level that Wenger thinks he can play at every week, then, you know, I'd say it's a no-brainer to play him in the middle, basically. But,
I agree. Yeah. He kind of lost his way a bit this year.
Yeah, he did, and although admittedly before the World Cup I thought he was, you know, looking good for England anyway.
And he played well in that friendly against, who was that one? We drew 2-2 and he got injured.
Yeah, was it Ecuador or Honduras? He played well against Peru at Wembley and then the two friendlies,
He hasn't really played well since then, has he?
No.
Neither for us or England.
Yeah.
I sometimes wonder whether his injuries have caught up with him a bit, but you know, I hope he recovers from them.
Yeah.
Well, gents, with all these players and all these players we've brought in as well, the big question, can Arsenal win the title with the squad they have now? Any of you?
No.
No.
Okay. Are you big? Juicy, 1,000%, in the words of Simon Cowell, no. Not in a month of Sundays. Do you know what? We'll be lucky to finish fifth.
Well, that was going to be the next question.
We're fighting to finish fourth. But okay. Without Welbeck, I would say we ain't going to finish fourth. I don't think we're in the same league as Man City and Chelsea in terms of squad and defensive players and defensive midfielders and, dare I say, even strikers. Then you've got Liverpool, who spent $150 million in the summer on some very, very good players. And they started with Sturridge and Sterling. Lambert's a great player. Lallana's a great player. So that's the three. United have spent $300 million since last January. They're not going to be down there in eighth for very much longer. Spurs are a threat with a new manager up and coming. I thought Everton might be a threat, but I'm not so sure now. I haven't seen them this season.
Are we going to finish seventh now?
I think realistically we're going for fourth with Liverpool and Man United.
I would agree in terms of Chelsea and Man City looking far superior to us.
Yeah.
Obviously, as an Arsenal fan, I'm a journalist, but I would never credit Spurs with anything.
No,
I don't rate them at all. No. As a team, as a squad, as a club, but obviously you didn't hear me say that. No. Basically, Liverpool, I've got a lot of respect for Liverpool's club, as City, as what they've gone through. Brendan Rodgers, I wasn't sure to start with when he took over, especially with that documentary. He was a bit sort of David Brentish, but his tactics are actually quite good. I just think they might struggle in terms of extra games this season, Liverpool. So that might be, it'll be interesting how that weighs on their squad. But yeah, I'd say third or fourth for us again. Chelsea and Man City. Admittedly, Man City lost to Stoke the other week, but they look far ahead of us at the moment, which is quite disappointing to say that in early September, basically. But
it's worrying, isn't it? If we'd have spent the remaining money that we had in the transfer, the so-called 100 million transfer war chest, if we had another centre-half, a defensive midfielder, maybe another winger or whatever, I'd be saying, yeah, we're up there with City. If we had Jovetic instead of them, and if we had Kompany instead of them, and if we had Yaya Toure instead of them, I'd be saying, yeah, we'd be up there instead of City. We must be able to find three similar players for 60-odd million somewhere in the world. That money wasn't spent, was it?
Well, yeah. But
so we're destined to finish fourth.
Kev, I've got two people doing an impression of Fraser from Dad's Army saying we're doomed. Surely you think we're going to win the league comfortably, right?
You'd call the men in white coats. I concurred with that. I mean, it comes down to two simple things. We haven't got enough depth at the back, and we haven't got enough quality to protect the back four in front. We're just lacking. So we might not have won the league if we had spent the money, but it would have given us a better chance. And I don't really see the point in it sitting in the bank. Interest rates aren't very high.
Are we going to kind of like take this out on Wenger at some stage? Are we going to say he should have spent the extra money?
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously.
Did he let the fans down?
Yes. I mean, well, what
because
was the point?
To be fair, Welbeck was a very last-minute signing.
Well,
if United said, no, we're not selling him to Arsenal, we'd have been fucked.
There's Miles Palmer in Arsenal News Review suggesting that Welbeck is not dissimilar to the Arshavin purchase in that Wenger wasn't particularly interested, and that perhaps it was more of a board buy than a manager buy.
Is that why he hasn't welcomed him to the club?
Well, that's what Miles Palmer is suggesting. So
he'll be interesting for a year on the substitutes bench then.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how he's handled by the manager. But in a way, good to me if the board are saying enough of this, not buying people and having faith in Yaya Sanogo, this isn't good enough. I mean, Gazidis sits there and watches the games home and away, he's not completely stupid.
And he must have seen Wenger go off to see the Pope on transfer deadline day. He must have thought, well, if he's not going to do anything, I'll do something.
I did an amusing tweet on that very subject, in which I didn't see what the problem was, because divine intervention was the only way Arsenal were going to win the league as long as Wenger was the manager.
Remind me not to retweet that.
Well, what did you think of that, though, Dave? What did you think of Wenger going off to Rome on transfer deadline day? Okay, good cause. He was asked to referee this match. Great cause, fantastic. All credit to him for that.
Yeah.
But don't you think he could have just said, well, look, I'm in a bit of a precarious situation at Arsenal. They wanted me to spend more money. The fans are a bit on edge. We've not had a great start to the season. I think I'd better stay in England that day, if only to be seen to be trying to spend some money.
It didn't look good, I'm afraid. I know it's all laudable. I know it's world peace, guys. But trust me, Maradona and Baggio being on the same pitch is not going to solve the Arab-Israeli conflict.
And to be honest, it's a bit like Ozil last year, isn't it? We were in the last chance saloon. If we'd not signed Welbeck, and as Kev says, it might well have been a board decision to do that, over Wenger's head. And to be honest, we signed the other three players when he was in Brazil. Yeah. We signed Sanchez Ospina and maybe not Chambers, but certainly Sanchez and Ospina when he was out in Brazil.
Well, there was an interesting question on onlineguna.com. What was it? Under Wenger's new agreement, do you think he's got less responsibility over the ins and outs transfers, and that is handled by Dick Law and Gazidis? I mean,
well, I think the conclusion is after the end of the transfer window, he's got his power back. Because frankly, if it was...
What were we doing in the last 6 weeks of the window?
I think the board would have made sure we had targets and got out and spent the bloody money. You know, I think Gazidis wants to spend the money.
Yeah, I do as well.
I just think Gazidis is still shackled.
By Wenger?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kroenke's perfectly happy because Kroenke has no interest in Arsenal winning anything. You know, he's just interested in the books, and the books look good. You know, he's happy with that profit. You know, the club will post profit figures again.
A scenario, Kev. We finish fifth or sixth this year, which is the lowest Wenger's ever finished in his reign. What are the repercussions for that?
Well, I'll give him another year, but he might find his contract terminated a year early because basically one assumes he'll take responsibility for the shortage in quality that would lead to us finishing outside the top four. And I mean, I think we... There's a general view that he would have gone if we didn't win the FA Cup.
I got interviewed by Johnny Phillips for Sky Sports, basically, and he put it to me that if we'd have finished fifth and lost the FA Cup final, would Wenger have still been in charge? And I said, God, that's a tough call. I don't think he would have been. I think if we'd have finished fourth and lost the FA Cup final, I think he still would be. But if finished fifth and lose the FA Cup final in May, then I think we'd have gone then.
I'm not even sure about finishing fourth and losing the FA Cup final.
Right.
I think the fans would have made his life so miserable.
Yeah.
To beat Wigan on penalties and to not beat Hull City in the cup final, the easiest cup final we're ever going to get after Birmingham, which we lost.
Oh, God.
I mean, I don't think the fans would have let him ever forget that.
I think in Wembley,
10 years without a trophy, I think he'd have been gone.
If we were going to lose that in the last few minutes of the game, I think the Wenger out calls would have come.
Imagine the atmosphere at the end if we'd have lost.
It wouldn't have been good.
Right, let's move on to the subject of Leigh's book. It is Arsene Wenger's 50 defining fixtures. So what do we have a recollection of a defining game each during Arsene Wenger's time at Arsenal? Leigh, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, cheers for that. My favourites are obviously, I mean, you can argue that there's two eras so far. I'd like to think there's a third era after May 2014, but there's two eras, 96 to 2006, arguably the end of the Champions League final, and then 2006 until, May this year. The glory years and the years we struggled, basically. And a lot of the book is obviously devoted to the glory years because they were a lot more fun. And if you're talking about a particular game, Everton, when we won the league at Highbury, when Bowl played over to Tony Adams, my all-time favourite Arsenal player. I'm getting goosebumps even talking about it now. And it's just, that was just such a glorious day. That was just absolutely fantastic. And I tried to depict that as well as I could in the book, basically. But yeah, that's probably my favourite ever game was 4th of March 1987, the Littles Cup semi-final replay when we beat Spurs 2-1 in White Hart Lane.
I remember that. I was there.
Brilliant. I'm sure
did
we
you
all
get crushed?
Yes, I did. It was a bit dodgy, really. But,
I know.
I'm sure we went to all three of those games, basically. But that's my all-time favourite. But in terms of under Wenger, that Everton game was just glorious. It was fantastic. But yeah, there's a few more like that. Obviously, detailed the Invincibles, talks about cup finals, just great victories against Spurs from 96 to 2014.
You don't have to shoehorn this in. I will do it. But basically, there will be a competition on the website. You can get the answer by listening to this podcast. Your answer is Mauricio Tirico.
Lovely. They're paying to enter that competition. We've just broken three laws. That's absolutely fine. Mr. Ashford, what do you think was the defining game during Wenger's time at Arsenal?
Oh, that's a damn very, very good question. There have been loads of them. I would probably say last year's FA Cup, well, this year's FA Cup final, because if we'd lost that, losing two finals in succession against lower opposition, I don't think Wenger would have survived that. So the fact that we won it has kept him in a job. And the other game, I would probably say, was in the 2004 season when we played Liverpool at home and beat them 4-2.
Yeah, that's in the book, actually.
Yeah. And we come off 3 or 4 bad results, one of which meant us going out of Europe. Yeah. I think we lost to Chelsea. And then, if I remember rightly, was it Good Friday?
It was Easter, wasn't it?
And Liverpool scored first and then went 2-1 up.
They did.
So we've equalised, they've gone 2-1 up. And we're all sitting there thinking, oh my God, we're throwing it away again. Just like 2001, just like 99. It's not going to, just like 2003, in fact, when we finished second all these times. Better than United in every season, but finished second. So you're thinking 2004, you're thinking, oh no, it's happening all over again. United are going to win, we're 10 times better than them. We're 2-1 down to Liverpool, we're out of the Champions League, we're slipping down, we have to win this game.
Spoiler alert, the resurrection came 2 days early.
And then those brilliant Thierry Henry goals, the goal of the century. When he's just picked it up, gone round there, lobbed it in the North Bank. It was magnificent. We wanted to win 4-2. To me, if we'd have lost that game, the Invincibles wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, I mean, you know Highbury inside. I'd say that was one of the best atmospheres.
Highbury ever.
That was fantastic.
That was like a cup final winning that game. Brilliant, you know. That's if I had to pick one, I'd have to say that. I still remember it as if it was yesterday. And also Arsenal Wigan as well. Maybe not Wenger, but the last game at Highbury. If we'd have lost that game or drawn what a bummer that would have been. And again, Wigan were ahead twice, weren't they?
Indeed.
And we came back and won, and my God, what a great day that was.
Yeah.
Brilliant day.
There was a line in the book actually about the first ever Arsenal goal scorer at Highbury, Leicester Fosse, I should say, in September 1913. Was Henry King, and I sort of turned it around to say King Henry scored an
awesome
goal. So I just had to add that. Sorry about that.
And I suppose if we're talking about the 2004 season, we could also say the last home game, Leicester at home.
Yeah, that's in the book as well.
We were a goal down, for God's sake.
We were.
Yeah. We were going to throw it away on the last game of the season.
Yeah.
You know, we were already champions, I think, weren't we?
Yes.
The invincible record was maybe not going to happen. So thank God for that. All in 2004.
Yeah.
And millions of others. I'll tell you other defining games.
Go on.
Was that Northern team in Spain that kept knocking us out of the Champions League?
Deportivo.
When we had the Invincibles and the 2002 team and the 3 team, you know, every single year, if I remember rightly, Valencia or Deportivo knocked us out.
Always Valencia.
Yeah.
And they were in the same league as us on paper. We were a much better team.
Yeah. And so that's a really good choice, actually. Because I was at the Mestalla in 2001 when we got knocked out by John Carey. And that should have been our year, along with 2004 in Europe. And that's actually in the book as well. It was quite painful writing about it. But you're absolutely right. That should have been our year.
Kev, what was your defining game?
Well, I'm going to try and pick one that isn't in the book. I don't know if it is, but one I think is sometimes overlooked was a rocky period. We did mention earlier that Steve called for Wenger's head in the autumn of 2001.
Well, that was because, believe it or not, because of those Deportivo defeats.
Well, we weren't playing well.
I always thought we were better
than
this.
I think it was Olympiacos or someone like that that had beaten us.
We're better than Deportivo. They keep bloody beating us. Get rid of the manager.
I remember there was a period just before, I think the end of November, early December, when everything was up in the air. Wenger hadn't signed a new contract at a time when even I was hoping he would. We were having a bit of a rocky patch, and we had this game at home to Villa, and I remember us being down. I don't know if it was 2-1 or 2-0, but we ended up winning it in the last minute 3-2. And it was just felt like in that 2001-2002 season a bit of a turning point, because we had either drawn or lost previous matches except for an isolated win at home to Man United. And we're going through a difficult spell, and then we followed that up by beating Juventus from memory, the ISNA council giving planning permission for the new stadium, and Wenger also announcing that he'd signed a new deal. So it was just a few things together, but it almost felt like the Villa comeback symbolised a turning point in the sequence of events, and it was a dramatic game. It was a good game.
Was that in the pissing rain and Paul Merson scored the first goal for Villa?
It could have been. To be honest, my actual memories of the match itself are sketchy, to say the least. I just remember thinking, as time has gone on, that it was a sort of cornerstone match,
yeah.
which isn't always remembered.
Yeah.
But in the course of a season, it actually was hugely significant.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because the start of that sort of 2001-2002 season, it was quite in and out. We'd lost to Leeds at home 2-1 in early August. Obviously, I think we lost 4-2 to Charlton on the Sunday, and we played Man United on the Monday in the League Cup, and we beat them 4-0 with both teams fielding reserves. But yeah, that Villa game was quite crucial. And I think we lost to Newcastle the week after, 3-1 at home, but that was a real, if we'd have lost that the Villa game, that would have been, been a run of defeats after that. We might have knocked us sideways, so that's a connoisseur's choice, Kevin. Fair.
You know, rather topically, we haven't lost away at Villa for donkey's years. Can't remember the last time we lost away at Villa. And we're playing them next Saturday.
Well,
thanks for putting the buck on it.
Do you like me, do you ever get a feeling where if you've gone somewhere and you haven't lost for like 10, 12, 14 years, this is the year?
Nothing lasts forever.
Oh, I see. Exactly, Kev. I've got that feeling this year about Villa.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, last year I was expecting us to lose. We won 2-1. Season before that, I was expecting us to lose. We drew 0-0. Season before that, expecting us to lose, we won 1-0.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't go on forever.
Yeah.
Although United seems to win there every year, but...
Yeah, they do.
But I've got a bad feeling about Villa away this year. I hope I'm wrong.
Well, before we wrap up, sadly, let's have... Thanks for that cheery point. It's made my evening.
Just a touch of reality to it.
If any of you want to phone the Samaritans, it's 0800 111 999. Before we wrap up, a word about the current issue of the Gooner from our editor. Over to you, Mr. Witcher.
Yes, just to explain that we need 2 weekend home matches per issue to sell enough copies to make it worthwhile. And so the current issue is the start of season issue and will be on sale at the Man City game, and then we will bring out the second issue of the season for the Southampton Capital One Cup match and the Spurs home game that follows as well. The current issue though is well worth buying. It's got in part one of an excellent interview with Perry Groves by Laith, who's sitting just across the table, and it seems so long ago since it's gone to press, I can't even remember what else is in it. But I do remember thinking...
Paul Vassar book as well.
Oh, there is. Fair point, sir, yes. And also a bit of an article about whether we should have bought Cesc Fabregas or not, which is a topic we never got round to discussing today.
But we'll have a quick answer. We should.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. There we are. So plenty there. £2.50 still, and should be available from someone on your route to the ground.
Finally, the usual reminder that if you want to email us about anything related to the podcast, our address is goonapodcast@gmail.com. And with that, it's goodbye from Steve.
Goodbye.
Kevin?
Just a quick... I said I'd mentioned Simon Albert when I last saw him because he's the podcast's biggest fan. So goodbye to all, including
goodbye,
Simon.
Goodbye, Simon.
Yes. Bye-bye, Simon.
And Laith.
And Laith.
Cheers.
Easy.
Okay.
We'll be back at the beginning of October with our next offering.
When you get to that age, you do sometimes peak a bit early.
Investor's not here to conduct, is he?
Okay.
He's our conductor.
Okay, listeners, we'll be back at the beginning of October with our next offering, although we are examining the idea of doing an extra podcast via Skype once a month if there is sufficient interest and indeed available guests. For now, though, this is your host, David Udo, saying goodbye and thanks for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Hey!